everyone, and welcome to Big Chat, the podcast series by Norfolk's cancer charity Big C, where we talk all things cancer related, from bereavement and mental health to prevention and research. Today I'll be speaking to Lewis Wardell and Sean Tutton, one a master's student and the other a PhD student, both researching different forms of cancer.
Hello, my name is Lewis Wardell, and I'm currently studying natural sciences at the UEA. I'm in my third year of an integrated master's, so it's a pretty cool course where I get to choose my own modules and I have to major in two different science subjects. So that can be anything from maths to chemistry to even computer science. So that's really cool. And my aim is to then do my master's project next year in cancer research, so that's what I'm currently doing.
And I'm a PhD student also at UEA. My area of interest is the colon, which doesn't sound too glamorous, but I think it's a fascinating tissue type and pathologies, so diseases which affect the colon, for example, colorectal cancer. They're a big public health concern, so the focus of my PhD is essentially creating like mini colons or mini organs in the lab, and then we use that to study the colon in health and disease.
And what is it that made you both kind of go down the route of cancer research in this way?
Okay, so on a personal note, I lost my granddad when I was 3 years old to a brain tumour, and obviously cancer stole all the memories that I could have potentially had with my granddad. And that at that age, obviously, I was still so young and I didn't really understand anything. But I was like, wow, something can take my granddad from me from so young. It's just like, this thing must be powerful. We need to, like, know more about it. And then as I grew older, I got interested into it. Cause, you know, obviously, it's one of the biggest killers in the world. And then my grandma, she got diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma. And I thought, oh my gosh, stage 4, she's probably not going to make it out of this. You know, when you hear a stage 4, it's like huge. And then the miraculous recovery she made through the cancer medicine and research that has been made was crazy. And now she's in remission. And I was 16 at the point, and I thought, wow, we can actually combat this crazy disease. And I thought, okay, now I want to research into this as I go through my educational, you know, career. And so when I was 18, I started reading more about it. And then when I got to university, I thought, right, in one of these summers, I need to get an internship so I can actually see what amazing research is going on. And so that's why I'm really interested in cancer, because it's affected me personally, but I know it's affected everyone. And I think almost anyone you talk to will have a family member or friend that has been affected by cancer. And the more research we can do is so much better to get one step closer to eventually curing it if we can. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really pertinent to hear. Like you said, I mean, with a disease that is as ubiquitous as cancer, like you alluded, it's really rare to find someone who doesn't at least know someone who, yeah, who's had it or they've had it themselves. And if you kind of like look at the stats as well, like from just a public health point of view, that kind of broad point of view, like colorectal cancer, I think it's like 40,000 people per annum in the UK. I think according to, it's around that, if that's not the exact value.
Yeah.
And I think it gets better year on year, but it's still only like a 50% survival rate after 10 years. Now, that is up massively over the last, like, 40 years or so. I think it used to be around 20%. So clearly, like, the research is making, you know, a major impact, you know, but there's a lot more to be done. And yeah, I wanted to contribute thereof, which is why I interned for Big C.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you both said though, like the statistics and everything, like it's 1 in 2 people get cancer, you know, 50% of the population in total it is. And I just want to ask you, Lewis, as well, what, because you interned for breast cancer research, didn't you?
Yeah.
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 So I just wanted to know why you interned for that one when you said that you've got like your sort of own personal experiences with your grandfather with a brain tumour and your grandmother with a lymphoma.
Yeah, well, so there's two reasons, really. first reason is obviously that breast cancer is one of, if not the biggest killer in women, right? So it's huge, and research obviously needs to be done on that. And the second reason is more based around the research, is that I'll explain it later, but it was easier because breast cancer is more defined, really. So we know each subtype and they're well characterized. So it was easier with the research that we were doing that I could compare what we already know to what we were finding out. So that was easier for us. But yeah, obviously breast cancer is absolutely huge and has affected so many people. So yeah, it's really important to look into that.
What was it for yourself, Sean, that made you want to go into the colorectal?
So I've been really fortunate in that I know people who have had cancer, like friends, but I've been lucky enough that I haven't had any immediate family who have had it. So I personally didn't have an emotional connection to a particular type of cancer. I just knew that it was a big problem that I wanted to help tackle. So I kind of went into it based on kind of the tissue types that I found that I engaged with the most, and I personally found kind of the best to study. So through my biomedicine degree program at UEA, I was exposed to swathes of research and also researchers who are getting hands-on in that kind of field. And that's when I came across my supervisor, Dr. Mark Williams, and I really liked the kind of stuff that they were working on. I thought it was really exciting. I could talk about it a bit more detail later. But I just thought the work they was doing was amazing. I just wanted to be a part of it and kind of learn from them. So that's kind of how I got into that field. That was what drove me there.
What is it that you specifically do in the lab at the moment?
So as I alluded to earlier, in order to study the colon in health and disease, i.e. cancer, we don't use animal models. Instead, the Williams lab at UEA, they use something called, it's a 3D culture system known as colonic organoids. Well, that was a lot of technical words. So what is an organoid? So essentially, biopsies can be taken from patients undergoing surgery at the local hospital, colorectal cancer patients, that is. And members of the Williams lab, in particular, Dr. Victoria Jones and Dr. Mark Williams, they do their magic, and voila, we get what are essentially mini human colons growing in the lab. And I mean, when I saw that for the first time, I was just, I mean, what is cooler than a mini organ in a petri dish, right? Doesn't really get much better than that. So the focus of my PhD is to help kind of like optimized platform, but also to develop a new organ-like model of the human colon known as an organ on a chip. And this is in collaboration with Dr. Aaron Saeed and his team, who are bioengineers also at UEA, and the aforementioned Williams lab, of course. And so the reader might be wondering, you know, why is developing this platform important and how could that pertain to cancer research? Well, as of yet, unfortunately, as we all know, there isn't a one size fits all treatment that that tackles kind of all cancer effectively in all patients. But what we do have is kind of an arsenal of therapeutics which may be effective, say, in one patient but resisted in another. And so why does that happen? Well, from patient to patient, the genetic basis of cancer varies greatly, so that no one cancer is the same, and that's why no one treatment works for everyone. So wouldn't it be great if we knew prior to a patient being treated in the hospital, what treatments would be effective and what treatments would be resisted? Well, with the ability to make and grow mini organs, you can screen drugs against the patient's own tissue, see what's effective, and then translate that into the clinic. So the patient has a tailored suite of treatment, and that's called personalized medicine, and that's the overall ethos of the lab, what they're moving towards. So that's why the platform is important. But I'd like to emphasize that I'm very early on, so this has been driven by a group of very talented people who've been there for a long time, and I've just joined, so that's in no means taking credit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Do you feel like you're quite supported in the sense at the moment in the labs with all of these other sort of researchers around you then?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think I mean, there's a lot of new starters in the lab as well. There's quite a few master's students as well. And everyone's kind of fitting in the pipeline. Everyone's kind of got their own niche. And they're a really lovely group of people. Like, I couldn't ask for better. And that's why I stayed on, really, because everyone's just so nice and lovely.
Nurse, I just wanted to ask you a bit about your sort of experience when you was interning with breast cancer research and what you did exactly in your role there.
Okay, yeah, so it was a pretty steep learning curve for me because I had to learn programming, and obviously I had no experience of programming before, and I was just like, wow. Okay, so I had to learn this language of code called R, and basically the work that I was put with was a PhD student called Sergio Lelenzo Lago, the Spanish student. He's super clever, the best coder I've ever seen in my life. They would do these weekly challenges, and he would somehow make a picture out of each graph to like designate to each little challenge, and it was just crazy, and I was just like, wow, this guy's awesome. So what he was trying to do was he would create a pipeline of code that would input data from the Cancer Genome Atlas, which is this online database of loads of individual samples of patients, when they maybe died, when they got diagnosed, what stage, even some gene expression stuff, loads of stuff, anything you could think of is pretty much on there. So he was creating this pipeline that would input all of that data for each patient. And it would create these novel stratifications, it's called, using this latent process decomposition. It's pretty complicated, but it would take these in using the differentially expressed genes, clinical associations, and associations with genetic and epigenetic alterations, which sounds crazy, but it takes all that data for each cancer. It wasn't just breast cancer, it was several cancer types, take them all in, and then it would assign them to about several groups, which are like subtypes. So it'd create its own subtypes from basically every these cancers, which was crazy. So it was like creating its own subtypes and associating each sample to a subtype. So one sample might be like 70% this subtype and maybe 30% this one and stuff like that. So yeah, it's pretty crazy to wrap your head around, like coming from a second year student at uni and then jumping straight in was crazy. But the work these guys are doing is nuts. And I was just like, wow, this is really good work. And big thanks to Daniel Brewer as well. Great guy. He's doing great work on prostate cancer at the moment. Right. So so with that data, Sergio would then let me see if there's any similarities between different LPD groups. So maybe one LPD group, these are the subtypes, the LPD groups, maybe one was associated with an ethnicity more than another, or maybe one was associated to a different stage or a higher stage than another. So I was just playing around with the data, cause it took ages because I had to just load all this data and then put it into graphs, and it was really cool. So it was really amazing. And before all that, they let me play around with the data. So I played around with the age and the ethnicity of patients and the longevity of patients whenever they're diagnosed, and it was really cool. And they let me do so much, and they supported me throughout the whole thing, and I'm just so glad they let me do it. The experience I gained was invaluable, I'd say, and I'd really like to thank them for all their hard work they gave me. So, and a big C in the Lilac. The Lilac have been amazing supporting me, so thank you very much.
Sean, you kind of seemed like you kind of picked up on like the coding there, as if like you kind of had to do it yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think we have a bit of a similar link there. I'd like to echo that sentiment, you know, that Lewis went through. I mean, I'm familiar with the Brewer Labs work, and I think that they are just technical wizards.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, really like to thank Big C and the Lilac Ladies who also supported my studentship as well, you know. But yeah, I also worked in R. So my lab experience during the summer of 2019, I think it was. So we used the patient-matched organoid, so that's the mini gut, and the tumoroid, so that's the mini tumor platform. And we also looked at the gene expression profile between the two systems. So what is gene expression? Well, essentially it's how active and productive a gene is at making RNA and then eventually protein. So we wanted to see that when, you know, tissue becomes cancerous, which genes are more expressed and which genes are less expressed. And we had a particular candidate signaling pathway of interest, and we looked at targeting some of the components of that signaling pathway, which were kind of upregulated exclusively in the cancer with, you know, inhibitors and other pharmacological agents. So yeah, it's a bit of overlap.
Yeah.
Although I think Lewis's was much more technical. Get my computer science based.
Yeah, I didn't see a wet lab the whole time. Yeah, it was pure computer. Yeah, well, because it was during the COVID lockdown, so I was so lucky that it still went ahead, really. So I was just doing it all from home, and I'd meet up with Sergio and Dan almost like every day, and they would just tell me what I needed to get on with. I'd do it, and then, yeah, we'd just report back, and it was lovely, because we had a little tea meeting on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock. That was lovely. Yeah, it was great just to see the whole team, and we'd all talk about our own research. We'd all perhaps do a PowerPoint like once a week, just so everyone could see where everyone is and what they're getting up to, which was really nice, because then everyone would comment saying, oh, you could do this here, do that there. And it was just, yeah, it was lovely. The team was great. The team was great.
Just talking on that a bit as well, in terms of during COVID, how exactly has it been for either of you in terms of studying through this, in terms of research through this? One of my friends, she's doing a similar thing, and she said that during her PhD, she wasn't able to go into the lab for such a long time, and she's in her last year of doing the PhD, and she said that she found it doesn't see how she's gonna sort of complete it, because she didn't get the time in the lab to do her research, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, it's definitely tricky. So for me, I started in September, my PhD, and I think it's been, obviously it's a bit of a challenge, but I think, I don't think it's impacted my research at least too much, because I think we've been quite lucky in that because I'm spread between multiple labs and there's lots of different sites in which I can work, it was fairly easy to kind of spread people out, you know, where, you know, there's not everyone in one room, which is the case for a lot of people. So I've been really lucky in that regard. And I think the ethos that people took is that if you can do it at home, do it at home. And if you can't, you know, you can't run a PCR in your living room, then do it in the lab. And yeah, so I think everyone's been really accommodating and really understanding and really helpful. And like Lewis said, I mean, throughout lockdown, we had those kind of online meetings where we would discuss, you know, data going into upcoming publications, and talk about data analysis going forward. And also, I think it's actually been beneficial in a way for, I don't know if other people have felt the same, perhaps you could wade in on this, Lewis, but I think it's made scientific conferences and meetings much more accessible because everything's online now, you know.
Yeah.
I went to a presentation recently that was held in like Germany, and I wouldn't have gone if it hadn't been online. So I think I've actually, think there's been disadvantages, but I think people are more connected than they ever were. So
yeah, I completely agree with that, Sean. Because at the end of the internship, we actually had the first ever Norwich Cancer Symposium. I don't know if you went to that, but there was people from all around the world who came, and they were all presenting their research, which was crazy. I even had a little poster there, which was amazing. So actually, I think it has brought the world closer together in terms of the research world, which is awesome. Yeah. But then again, for that internship, I was very lucky that it was obviously computer-based. Otherwise, I don't think it would have gone ahead at all. So in that respect, yeah, it was great. And then In terms of studying, it's pretty hard to get the motivation for studying whilst doing it at home. You just turn the laptop on, presentation, you can't even see the lecturer, and they're just talking to you, which is tough. But after this, the resilience we're all students going to have, like, next year is just going to be crazy, and then when everyone comes together, it's just going to be so nice. So we just got to get through it, and we'll be there.
Yeah,
absolutely. And talking about the Norwich Cancer Research Network, I think, like you mentioned, they benefited greatly from being online. I mean, it's really convenient, you know, they meet on Wednesdays or whatever. You can just quickly, you know, log on a minute before, hop in, and then watch the cool presentations that are happening all over the, looking at the research happening all over the NRP, and then you just log off, and it's just so convenient, right?
Yes.
It's amazing. Yeah, they're doing that almost every Wednesday now. They get someone in from Cambridge, Oxford, you know, Norwich, anywhere. Yeah, it's great.
Dr. Victoria Jones, I believe, from the Williams Lab, who I mentioned before. I think she's got a presentation coming up, if anyone's interested.
Lovely.
I think so. I'll just double check.
It's all cutting edge as well, so it's really awesome to see what everyone's doing. It's nice, really nice.
So would you say that in terms of maybe from like a more work perspective of doing the research and everything, that some of it is quite easily done at home, but then in terms of maybe more yours, Lewis, where you're in lectures and stuff like that, it's that's the part that's more difficult?
Yeah, I've personally feel like I need that personal interaction with the lecturer. You know, you can put your hand up. They can see if they're going too fast or too slow, because everyone's just like, what have you just said? But they can't see that. They can't see our faces. So they just keep going on, and we're just like, what is going on here? But I'd personally love to get that personal interaction. And then we can do like smaller stuff in the lab. Like I was supposed to have about 3 different lab modules this year. They all got cancelled. And fair enough, they like zoomed all the labs, and there was just someone in the lab doing it all. But it's hard to see it unless you're there in person, you know, just see what's going on. So I'd much prefer it if we were in person, but we understand that this is what we're going through, so, you know.
I also imagine it's quite tough for Big C, right? I mean, it must be difficult to fundraise and, you know, get people engaged. So it's kind of impacting research. It's a multifaceted attack, really, on research, you know. So I think it emphasises the importance of Big C, and like now more than ever, really, when times are tough. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like you said just then with Big C and fundraising, obviously at the moment we've had so much that we just everything, if we've had events and stuff, a lot of them have been virtual. Like, I mean, you'll know yourself, Sean, with doing the Hadrian's Wall and everything. It's quite a good segue in a sense to what you both did for fundraisers. So as I just mentioned, Hadrian's Wall, if we start with yourself, Sean, what you did, because Lewis, yours was quite extensive, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't run halfway around the world like Lewis. but I still wanted to get involved. So, so I did the Hadrian's Wall virtual challenge, wherein you just trek the length of Hadrian's Wall. And it's like for charity, for fundraising. And I've also done like other little things like kind of the Big C, Big Cuppa event, you know, where you just host like, you know, do some baking and you get the family over Zoom, not in person, of course. It was they ate some virtual cake. and like raised money, and everyone kind of put into the pot. And I've also just been, I've regularly donated to Big C for years already. So that's kind of why I did it. And the reason I do it is because I think, and from the internship in particular, I think I gained an acute appreciation of kind of the vital role that it plays. I mean, without people donating and baking and volunteering, and the Lilac Ladies holding their fashion shows and poor old Lewis running forever. there wouldn't be any funding and the work wouldn't get done, you know. And yeah, so I wanted to just contribute in some way.
You kind of mentioned, Sean, a bit that you'd like donated to Big C and stuff like that in the past as well. I just kind of wanted to ask why exactly you had already been doing that and what it was specifically about Big C that made you want to do that.
Yeah, well, I'd only moved, I haven't lived here my whole life. So it was, they were kind of concomitant, you know, they kind of arrived at the same time, you know, me interning and me donating, because I'd only really recently come to Norwich. But interestingly, I was actually, if I wasn't going to do my internship, I was actually going to volunteer in a Big C shop. So either way, that summer was going to be a Big C summer. I didn't have time to do the shop because I was busy doing the other stuff. But yeah, the reason I kind of went for Big C, obviously, you know, the fundraising for research kind of thing, it supports, you know, the local charity. But also Big C do a lot of stuff that, you know, affects the community. Like, I think they make a tangible impact on the community, like, you know, the Big C Centre, for example. And I think on your website there were some really nice anecdotes. I can't remember their names, sorry, but it's you know, people with bowel cancer in particular. Obviously that resonated with me because that's what I'm interested in. You know, kind of the support that they got, both, you know, like emotional as well, you know, just helping them through what is, you know, a horrible disease. And it's just nice. Yeah, I just felt that I wanted to get involved in one capacity or another. And so that's why I've donated for a couple of years now, and why I did the internship in the first place.
And Lewis, if we talk about your fundraising.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, I wanted to fundraise because, like I said earlier, the experience I gained was absolutely invaluable. And to be honest, I would have done it for free. And I was living at home, so I didn't need the money at all. And I just thought, that £1,400 can really go towards either someone else getting this amazing experience that I've just got, or just going towards supporting, you know, the families in Norfolk that do go through this horrible disease. And the Big C do an amazing job, so I thought any money that I could raise would be awesome, maybe for another student, maybe for a family, maybe for another research, different research. And so I started my fundraising attempt, which was my first one, which was 125 miles in August, just to run 125 miles, right? Which is just over 4 miles a day, which was okay. And, you know, I ran it. It was during pre-season, actually, for the university football team. So it was pretty intense, because I would have to do a couple pre-season trainings, maybe even play a match, and then when I got home from my match at like 10 o'clock at night, I'd then go for a 4 mile run just to keep up the mile total, which was nice. And then so I did that, and I thought, you know what, I've done all this running and I just want to raise even more money, basically, for the Big C and the Lilac Ladies, because they've done so much for me. Yeah, so I just thought, let's just keep running. And I saw on Twitter that the Big C had spaces for the first virtual London Marathon. And I thought, that's a great idea. We don't even have to travel to London and I can just do it from Norwich. So a month later, with a little bit of training and running up and down Marriott's Way, the local pathway, which is about 26 miles long, conveniently 26 miles long, I then ran the marathon, and I started in just the top of Alsham, which is where it starts, and then ran all the way through Len Wade, and then Whitwell Station, ran past that, and then I ended up at the Norwich City Centre, basically, near the Halfords Roundabout, if you know where that is. And yeah, it was lovely. And I finished that, and then a week later, my fundraising page closed, and I managed to raise, you know, £2,800, which was awesome.
It's amazing.
So that's enough money for two students if they want an internship, or it can go to other research, or just to support any other family that's going through cancer at the time. And anything I could have done to help people worse off than I am, which I'm very grateful for, which was awesome. So anything I can do for you guys was amazing. So I've signed up again.
Thank you.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, October 4th this time, I think, or it could be October the 3rd. So I'm doing the virtual marathon again. So look out for that. Yeah, so it's going to be great. Hopefully I raise a bit more money, so.
Brilliant. Had you actually ever run a marathon before that?
No, I've never run a marathon before. So that was another reason why I wanted to do it, because I thought, you know what, I'm fairly fit and I've done all this running. I'd always wanted to run a marathon. That's one for the bucket list. And I thought, might as well do it for charity and raise loads of money. So there
and
we
kind
are.
Kind of pace yourself into it with doing a half marathon first, just full power.
Oh, well, I've done a half marathon before, but that was like 2 years before. And I thought, you know what, as long as my legs keep moving, I should be okay. But usually you're supposed to train about 4 months or something for a marathon. But I only had that 1 month because you guys posted it like a month before. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do it. So yeah, I just had a month, but yeah, it was fine. It was lovely. So thank you.
Are you like human or are you like a robot that just runs?
I don't know.
That's insane.
Honestly. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I just love it. So.
He was quite sporty beforehand then as well.
Yeah, I was. Well, obviously, I played for the uni team. We train 3 times a week. I've signed up to this local gym and I train there like 3 times a week as well. So I'm pretty on it at the moment. Yeah.
Just going back to the sort of schemes you was on, and I just wanted to know how exactly did it come about? How did you find that there was these placements?
I'll go first. Sorry, Sean. So this was quite a weird story, actually. My brother, he's currently doing a PhD in America, and he must be around the academic Twitter. And he saw Dan Brewer's advertisement on Twitter for this internship. And he was like, oh, Lewis, you need to apply for this. I was like, oh, nice. So I sent Daniel a message. And luckily, I was the first one that messaged him. And it was a first-come, first-serve basis. So that was amazing. So I managed to get it, which was crazy. He just messaged me. We went for a meeting. And he said, yeah, we're going to do this. I said, fine. Thank you very much. And yeah, the rest is history now, yeah.
So I was in my second year of uni as well. Actually, I think that is a prerequisite for the particular internship, being in the second year, or the penultimate year, I should say. And yeah, like Lewis, I was really interested in research, but I kind of knew that I was really interested in the colon based on, you know, my seminars and lectures. And so I approached Dr. Mark Williams, and I just kind of had a tour of the lab, and I met the team, and everyone was really nice, and I really liked the environment. And then in the conversations that kind of followed, regarding, you know, getting involved and interning at the lab, it was kind of through Mark that I became aware of the scheme. And it was just kind of perfect, really, because I already knew that Big C was a charity that existed. I was already familiar with them and I really liked them. And like I said, I've donated to them for a few years now. So when I found out I could get involved, I kind of just like jumped on the opportunity, really. And I enjoyed it a lot, you know. And I think research opportunities like this, as Lewis alluded to, you know, they're really, you know, they're essential for early career research. It's essential. It's almost a prerequisite for career progression. So I would really encourage people that if you're like serious about getting involved in research and you really like science, just to get involved with schemes like this, if possible.
Yeah. And I think it really shows you going out your own way, going to find an internship. It looks really good for future employment as well. Like, you know, I don't want to say most students, but I think some students probably just sit there, have a nice summer, put their feet up, whatever. But then to show that the other students are going out there, finding an internship and getting great, invaluable experience, it just shows, you know, great drive for future employment as well. And obviously future research, which is nice.
And what sort of advice would you both give to people going for, like, who are trying to get these sort of placements themselves, do you think?
I would say you don't need any really pre-existing experience at all. Like, I went in there not knowing anything. I didn't really know much about cancer, really, like, to the depth they know, obviously. And I didn't know how to code, didn't know anything about cancer. And I learned so much. So don't be put off if you don't know anything or, you know, you don't know how to do things. You will be taught on the internship and, you know, just go feet first, head first, whatever you want to do. It's just great experience. Yeah, so don't be put off if you don't know anything, because you will learn.
Absolutely. I would echo that. You know, this is the experience. This is the first experience. You know, it's okay if you don't have anything prior. I think what is absolutely essential, though, is just to be just really like enthusiastic. And yeah. I think that's what they look for the most. If someone kind of shows up and they're like, oh, I can't really be bothered, you know, then perhaps that's not the most conducive. But, you know, as long as you're like driven and enthusiastic, then, you know, these guys are really talented and they'll help you out a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Just be open to learn anything and everything, basically.
That wraps up the podcast now, actually. I just wanted to say thanks and thank you both for speaking to me today.
Great.
Thank you
very much.
Yep, I'll see you guys.
Bye.
And thank you so much to our audience for listening in again. Remember to follow us on social media. Our handles are Big C Charity on Facebook and Instagram, and on Twitter it's Big C Tweets. Thanks again for listening. Bye.